right, we're here. Chris Graham and Scott German. And hey, Scott, it's just like we're back at JPJ or Scott Stadium. As we're looking out at the world here, I am sitting to the right. You're sitting to the left. It's the way we always are. But now we're several counties apart on Zoom and Facebook Live talking sports, trying to talk sports. And first, I got to ask you, Scott, haven't seen you for about 3 weeks. When we were driving back from Greensboro, you said you may have to develop some hobbies. I wonder what hobbies you've come up with in the last 3 weeks.
Have you ever tried sniffing Elmer's glue?
Airplane glue might be more far reaching, but Elmer's glue, I mean, there's a smell to that. I remember in elementary school, crayons and the magic markers, actually.
Have I watched them?
Yeah.
A little of them, but I'm not feeling it. I'm just, I guess it's, I haven't been detached from real sports long enough to really develop any kind of passion for something that happened a year ago.
Okay. I did, actually the one night especially, the Sunday afternoon when Kyle Gond, DeAndre Hunter, and Ty Jerome were given the UVA sports Twitter, the basketball Twitter account, I thought it was fun to follow as they were having fun with each other that day. And then also the Tuesday night, not long after that, where they played the Purdue, Auburn, and then again the Texas Tech games. Sat down for all those. I noted to my wife something, Scott. You will identify with this because we sit beside each other so much at these games. I said to my wife, I think it was towards the end of the Purdue game. I said, man, this game's in overtime. I just looked at my watch. My heart rate's still 50. What's going on here? Usually it's 120 right now. And she said, because you already know how this ends. So it was a lot easier watching the second time than it was first time. I'll say that much.
Oh, I'm sure it was. But now, if I were to have had that smartwatch on, my heartbeat would probably still be about where it was when that game actually was taking place live. Because I am the voice of doom and feel like that I'm waking up. I'll wake up from a dream and what I'm watching is actually happening.
Yeah. I have to admit that like the Momani shot, I still get nervous when I see it. The three free throws from Kyle, I still get nervous. Like this time he's going to miss one or he's going to miss two, I guess, in case there. I do get nervous with those. So we got to relive those. That was fun. But now that, and I'll relive those twice each. I'm not into the baseball yet. I understand. Are you at least, you texted me to say that the Orioles are 1-2 in simulated baseball right now. So you're at least keeping up with something in that respect.
Yeah. And you might want to try that because it's really fun because the Baltimore Sun is actually going along with it because they're doing game stories. Like it was an actually played game. In fact, the Orioles are now 1-3 because they dropped a rain-shortened 2-0 game to the Red Sox yesterday.
Well, rain, it's going to rain sometimes, even in simulations. And I will say I've been trying to do my part. And Seth Meganson, I know you've probably listened to some of these podcasts. Seth Meganson, he was our bracketologist again this year. And we decided we would just use his bracket, his final rendering of the field. And we've gone through a few podcasts, and I've written – short little recaps just in one big column. The only caveat was Virginia had to make the Final Four because I had to have something to write about. And I've even been writing, I wrote those what UVA basketball fans need to know about columns about the upcoming games, the teams breaking down their rosters and how they approach. I've been writing those what UVA basketball fans need to know about. I wrote about, let's see, so far we had UVA beating Texas Tech in the first round, Maryland second round, Kentucky third round. And then in the to get to the Final Four, Virginia had to get past Dayton. And now in our NCAA tournament bracket, we have Virginia playing Kansas in the Final Four. I told Seth now that he can, if whatever he decides, he can have Kansas win if he wants to. I just wanted to get to the Final Four. But man, I went into those. I spent an hour writing each of those as if there were real games going on. So I can understand the Baltimore Sun in that respect because I was right there with them.
Yeah, and I actually enjoy your writings and your podcast, although I smell a couple of homers that UVA is automatically almost on the verge of being in the Final Four. But that's okay because it is all make-believe. But, it's an outlet. And the simulated baseball games are really interesting. I mean, they go through all the analytics that take place as if it were a regular game. Try, you know, go to the website and just watch a couple of them. I know it's all make believe, fantasy, whatever, but you know, it is something. And for what we're facing right now, I'm not having anything, then I guess, you know, better than nothing.
You know, I didn't feel so bad putting Virginia in our Final Four. The first one of these that I read was ESPN.com's, and they did theirs all at once. You know, Seth and I have been trying to play it out just because you need people to click on different things, right? So, but ESPN played theirs out in one long column. They put Virginia in their Final Four. So, you know, I felt like, hey, if ESPN could do it, I don't look like a hack if I put Virginia in the Final Four. Now, I did tell Seth, though, in defense of Seth Meganson, you said a couple of homers. I told him he could pick all the other games. Every other game was his. The Virginia games were mine until this round. Now, we're in the Final Four. Virginia playing Kansas. We also have Florida State playing Villanova. And so two ACC teams in this lean year getting to the Final Four. But I told him now he doesn't have to pick UVA. He can go Kansas if he wants to, and I won't push the edit button. And honestly, I kind of like the matchup a little bit, except that, you know, Kansas obviously would win that game. But I honestly, Scott, when I looked at every other round, Texas Tech, Maryland, Kentucky, and Dayton, I think Virginia had a good shot to win each of those four games. So I don't know if that's, you know, like a good thing, though, because all it does is depress me even more that we didn't get to play more basketball this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like pouring salt into the wound. But I agree with you because, you know, how can you go against the facts? And Virginia ended the season the hottest team in the country, seemingly have figured it all out. And by figuring it all out, I mean how to win games with a horrible offense. So they weren't doing, you know, a lot of people, yeah, but look at some of these teams they were beating. Well, you can't say that the way they ended the season. You know, they beat Louisville, they beat Duke. You know, there's some good, those were two top five teams. So,
but they beat in 11 of 12, they beat Florida State as well. They beat all three of those teams in that hot stretch at the end.
Right. So it wasn't built on a house of cards. They ended the season as the hottest team in the country and poised. Because they had, you know, veteran players that had been there before with Clark and Key, maybe not as much as Huff, even though Huff was there on the championship team last year. We, you know, well documented, he didn't play any minutes. So, but yeah, from the looking at it from maybe a betting angle, why would you not bet that Virginia couldn't advance to the Final Four?
So I'm looking over, you see me looking over towards the left of the screen here, basically. I'm looking over, I'm just realizing, oh yeah, by the way, we are on Facebook Live. That's right. It's not just Scott and I talking. There's actually the potential for people to weigh in with comments or questions. And so what I'm trying to do, our digital editor, Crystal Graham, is doing a great job of posting lots and lots of content to our Facebook page, which means I'm scrolling way down here because I'm trying to, oh, here we finally are. So no comments yet, but if you want to comment, if you have a question for Scott or I in terms of sports, UVA sports particularly, sports in general, feel free to go on our Facebook page, throw a comment up there, and we'll try it. I've got it up here now. I'm realizing I'm doing a job. It's not an easy one. You know, those TV shows, they got screeners and all this kind of stuff. At least they used to. Scott,
I used to.
I have to admit. Right now, you know, I'm still watching, like, during the day. This is sort of the insight into how Augusta Free Press's home operations work. Yeah, we're a news and sports business, but I usually leave sports radio on, the TV simulcast of sports radio on during the day, and I look over, and then when I'm doing work, I get amused by whatever. I'm still watching it. I still keep up the Golic show in the morning, Golic and Wingo in the morning, Levitard mid-morning. And then later in the day, the Tiki and Tierney show on CBS radio. And Scott, they're not much different than we are now. They're all sitting in their bunkers. They're using the Zoom technology and everything else. Their dogs bark. So I don't feel so bad. Actually, we're right there with those guys. I have to ask. And in fact, I know you've been a guest on a call-in show a couple times. So I know you're keeping up with sports radio, but talk to me about those experiences. You've had a couple of nice call-ins recently.
Well, and actually, it gets even better. So I've been, you know, I've kind of been nocturnal lately because there's not a lot going on in the daytime, and I stay up late now and listen with the technology of having Alexa or Siri, whatever you use. You can tune in live to radio stations all over the country. I used to listen to these radio stations over the air, and there's one in New York, WFAN 660 AM. That is sort of a blowtorch for the eastern the eastern part of the United States. And I've called in a couple of nights now in a row and was even called in last night and was invited back again tonight. Their call volume is way down. And the one of the icons of New York City talk radio, Steve Summers, is the overnight guy. He's one of the few left. They've pretty much laid off most of their talking heads. And, you know, he talks some sports, but basically he's gotten kind of just talking about the state of where we are right now. Last night we did talk sports. We talked about logistics of possibly having a major league season. He actually is doing his show from his kitchen. And one of the trademarks of Steve Summers is when he comes back from a break, he gives you who's in the room with him, the producers, the people, and he calls them on the other side of the glass. Well, now he says on the other side of his refrigerator is his producer who is back in the studio at WFAN. So, yeah, he's doing, and you can hear his dog barking, and his wife came in and asked him if he wanted a sandwich. And I mean, it's actually, to me, it's made it more real.
I think we were talking about this right before we clicked to go live. I think that something's going to come of this when this all lifts here in a few weeks. These kind of things are going to persist. You and I are going to do these things more frequently, where you can actually see and people can join in, like you do now. This is going to change some things, and I think from the media perspective in general, both good and bad. Right now we're hearing. You know, Scott and I are both veteran newspaper guys. That's how we first met. We worked together at a small newspaper, the News Virginia in Waynesboro, many, many years ago together. But both the local papers for us, the Waynesboro paper, the Stanton paper, owned by bigger companies, obviously, their employees are going to be put on furlough, 1 week furloughs each month, basically, each of the next 3 months, because advertising revenues are down. Scott used to work in advertising. People need news more now, certainly, and people are clicking on stuff. We know that. But there's not ad dollars to support it. So a lot of news folks are going to be laid off or partially laid off, whatever the case may be. And I imagine sports radio may be in a similar place for a short time at least. I'm a regular guest on that Mark Moses show down in Florida. Mark's a great guy. I've known him since his days in Charlottesville. And he's not only does he, you know, he's the main show guy, the local show guy, but also he helps sell ads for that station too. And you know, he's trying to fill 3 hours of content and also just, you know, keep the doors open basically for the time being. So that from that level all the way to the league, you're going to be hemorrhaging money for a time. Whether the NBA gets back going soon or later or not at all this year, and they just wait till next year. Baseball, if they play half a season, they're still going to lose the revenue from half a season. How many ever tickets they can or can't sell if they play in front of people at all. This is going to have an impact, at least for the next, even if we play games this year, Scott, I doubt we play in front of many fans. The TV revenues will still be there, you assume, but, you know, the league's going to take a hit. The salary caps are going to take a hit in those leagues that have those, the NBA, the NFL, well, maybe the NFL might emerge unscathed. We don't know. If this doesn't, you know, and it shouldn't last until the fall, football may be the sport that really survives this the greatest, but, you know, basketball, we're both big NBA guys. We're both big MLB guys. And colleges too. Colleges may suffer. So this may have some impact for at least, you know, a year, a couple of years down the road.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, whether you play in front of a empty arena or stadium or not, you know, it's got to affect advertising revenues. And that's what these sports leagues are all based on. So here's a shameless plug for Augusta Free Press. We've been doing I was getting ready to say ahead of the curve, but that's a bad analogy in light of what's we hear all the time. Yeah. We've been in front of this new technology for a long time because we've been doing Facebook Lives. We talked about how just when basketball season ended, some of our colleagues were not making their way down to the press room immediately after the game was over to get quotes. They were remaining back with us, and not just some of the hacks like us, but some of the illustrious Hall of Fame writers that we know covering the state of Virginia. So you got to feel pretty good about what Augusta Free Press has been doing for a couple of years, because this is old school to us.
This is.
And you could tell by watching some of these guys like Cuomo last night, you know, they look like a fish out of water.
And I've worked in front of the camera, for years. That's one thing I'm missing right now is the ESPN. I would be in the middle of my 18-game spring baseball schedule. Crystal Graham and I hosted two different times, a show on WVPT, the local PBS affiliate together. I've been on that side of the camera. I've been on this side of the camera an awful lot more in terms of Scott, you may remember this and you may not. And some of our viewers out there may remember. I'm a big Saturday Night Live fan. I've been forever. Al Franken, the now former Minnesota Senator, back when he was a regular on that show, there was a skit that he did, a recurring bit that he did on the Weekend Update segments in the late 80s, where he was a one-man news operation. He wore a satellite dish on the back of his head. He had a camera that was out in front of him, like attached to his neck. The microphone was built in, and he would be reporting live from the scene, but he was a one-man television station. I have felt like that guy. We have felt like those guys because you and I have been doing the post games after football games, after basketball games for at least, I'd say, 5 or 6 years now. When we realized that that's where the audience needed to be. Everybody else going and talking to Bronco or talking to Tony after a game, we're just another person. There are two people in that big sea of people. But if we're the only people talking after the game right away, and we can take questions and give comments, we did build up a good audience with that. So yeah, now it's funny. You see, you're right. You see Chris Cuomo broadcasting from his basement, the guy that you talk with on WFAN. So many people in this day and age. When I listen to Levitard in the morning, he and his crew, you know, that show has like 6 or 7 people on it, and they're all in different locations. And some of them sound like their phones are in a bathtub. I mean, they're in a well somewhere. For us, this is just another day as far as how we do things. I'm glad you pointed that out because we've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, and here's a warning. Probably within 5 minutes, my UPS man is going to drive down in front of the house, which is going to create Armageddon in the canine community.
Oh, well.
And I've got two of those canines that would just love nothing better than to get out and go meet him. So be prepared that you may hear some of that. But so getting back to our shameless plug here, because we've been doing this. This is not just something we're making up. We've been doing these Facebook Lives for, you're right, probably 3 or 4 years. What did you know then that now makes us look like we are so far ahead of everyone else? What did you know then to begin doing those things?
What my sense was, it was similar to my sense about 10 years ago or so. We started as a local newspaper. I mean, really just Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta County Online News. And I realized I was running myself ragged going to every city council and school board meeting when the other two newspapers in our area also had people at every school board meeting. But they didn't have to, each of those individual reporters didn't have to go to every one. And also I was fighting for a share of an audience when I could go for something different. So I expanded our reach into state politics, Virginia sports, and we grew an audience. I only had one person to deploy. And so I try to deploy that one person a lot better. So you think about, again, when we go to games, and for folks who are sports fans, you may not think about this, but the guys who cover, guys and gals who cover just one team, Virginia, let's just use Virginia because that's the school we know. At a typical basketball game now, not like 5 years ago, because so many sports media jobs have been cut in the last 5 years. But at a typical game, well, let's say a typical Duke game, there's four rows of media row with 11 seats on each row. That's how many reporters are there. There's 45 or 50 reporters there. If you and I go and sit down in that press conference, we may get one question in that 10 or 20 minutes that we get with Coach Bennett or Coach Bennett and players combined. We may get one question in. And really, it's kind of like when you watch the White House press corps. Your question isn't terribly original. You're just asking it so that your voice can be recorded asking a question of Coach Bennett. You know, you can get the audio of that later and transcribe it and use it. But in the meantime, if all those other people, all the other 43 people are sitting down there working to get their one question in, we're already talking to the fans. The fans just watched that game. They're probably getting ready to do something else. If it's a 9 o'clock start on a basketball game, they're getting ready to go to bed. But they might stick around for 10 or 15 minutes with us because we're smart guys. We've watched UVA since forever. And we're decent sports writers and sports knowledgeable people, et cetera. So, you know, maybe they care about what we say. Let's see. Let's test it out. And darn it if it didn't work. And we keep doing it. And so, but yeah, it's just trying to – we don't have the resources that they all have in terms of – I mean, now, of course, they probably do have the resources that we have because so many of those jobs have been cut, unfortunately. But back when we made this decision to go this route, it's like, what can we do? What can we do better? And clearly, people like it, and we're very honored. I'm humbled the fact that people care what we think about games. That's awesome because we would just drive home and have these same conversations that we have like right now or after a game. But the fact that 1,000 people want to tune in, and sometimes more than that, that's humbling to me.
And you would be surprised. I think I've told you a couple of times, and it's to me, it's almost awkward or embarrassing. I'm in Charlottesville a lot more now because I live closer to Charlottesville. Standing in line at Costco, two different occasions, I've had individuals come up to me and tell me, "Oh, I really like your podcast with Chris Graham on Augusta Free Press." And I'm not used to that. I don't really that's really not something I'm comfortable with, and I don't even know how to respond to it. Mm-hmm. First of all, I want to make sure they're not with the law enforcement. Maybe something, right? Something from my past that I thought I was clear of, but they do get watched. And if you think about it, after a game's over, well, most every game now is televised. By us doing what we do, we are giving them our take well before any of the newspaper writers are putting what their take is in print.
And yet that's exactly right. And we're giving you our first impressions. They're often the freshest impressions as a result. I guess one thing too, because we don't, one thing that's different, I mean, there's one other entity that does that right after a game, and it's the Virginia Sports Radio Network, Dave Kane. And, you know, after, I guess it's Tony Covington for football and Jim Miller for basketball. And not to say that they are constrained, but they are constrained. They work effectively for the school, not technically for the school, but they effectively work for the school. You're not going to get quite the criticism if warranted after a game. You're not going to get the 100% honest opinions. We bleed orange and blue. So it's not like, you know, we're out there just looking to gotcha, you know, UVA sports, but we'll tell you. I have not gone back, Scott, for example, and watched our post UMBC broadcast. But there was some unvarnished truth spoken that night, and so we'll tell you what we're thinking. And I think that's again what people probably find refreshing is that we're both, you know, dyed in the wool, orange and blue bleeders, but we'll also call a spade if necessary.
Absolutely, and I don't ever want to watch that again.
No. They replayed that one. I did not turn that one in. No.
So I want to turn it tables a little bit and talk about something real, sports-wise. Mm-hmm. The latest about, well, UVA basketball. So the kid, Johnny
Juzang.
Just announced a couple of days ago that he was leaving Kentucky.
Yes.
You know, everyone, I think, knows that he was a highly recruited five-star player, right?
Right.
Out of L.A.? from what we understand, it was between Kentucky and maybe Virginia. Virginia was certainly in his final three or four. Many think it was down between Kentucky and Virginia. So he transfers, and I saw an interesting post last night where he listed 8 or 10 schools that he was considering, and UVA was not among
them. Hey, Scott, we seem to have got – oh, there you go. There.
What? Do you think that's the – we're using these Kentuckys and Dukes as kind of landing spot to test these kids out, and we saw what he did. We saw how he played 1 year in Kentucky, and all of a sudden, we're not interested in him. You think there's some truth to that?
I would think that that there had to have been something put out. I mean, you know, whether or not. Well, let me say this one. I don't know for sure, but it seems to me he has that extensive list of schools he's put out there, and the fact UVA is not on it. I would wonder if he did put a feeler out, and if there was something put back. Or if maybe something more simple that after he made his decision back about a year ago, I guess it was last spring, that Virginia may have just sent, somehow word got to him that there was just no interest in the future in him either. But yeah, you know, he did not have a year. He did not have a good year at Kentucky. That was a team, you know, I didn't know anything about Kentucky until a few days ago when I wrote my fake preview of the upcoming AFP NCAA tournament game between UVA and Kentucky. We had them playing in the Sweet 16 round. And when you look at that Kentucky team, they weren't that deep. Calipari only went 7 deep with that team. And for Calipari to go 7 deep and leave a 5-star freshman basically on the bench tells you something what Calipari thought of him, right? So, no, I don't think. And plus, I would throw in, you know, the discussion. There was the kid from Harvard that was transferring and ended up at Ohio State, Seth something or the other, I can't think of his name now. There was a lot of hue and cry among the UVA fans. Hey, he turns down and blah, blah, blah. I did the analysis on that even before he made his decision. There's no room for him. I mean, there's no room for Juzang either. Juzang, of course, would have to sit out. Well, actually, no, you wouldn't have to sit out a year now. Now that rule, you can actually transfer and play right away one time in your career. But there's no room next year for either of those kids. The roster next year, when I look at it, there's already 11 guys that are going to be competing for probably 8 spots. We don't need 2 more guys to complicate that even further.
That's what I thought, is that there just wasn't any playing time for him. I don't care how good he was, you know. And it would also be – I don't know if – this has anything to do with it, but it wouldn't really be fair to the incoming freshman, would it? All of a sudden you throw somebody into the mix that they weren't counting on. And I know they look at the roster and they see what the playing time situation is. And then you pull a rabbit out of your hat, so to speak. I'm not sure played into it. And also just having the opportunity to watch him play for a year that, you know, he just may, the coaching staff may have felt like he wouldn't fit into the program.
By the way, Dale Thompson has commented on the East. He says, hey guys, be safe. So our good friend Dale, we haven't seen him in a few weeks either because we see him normally at JPJ. It's Seth Towns. And so here's what when I did my analysis, I thought it was worth bringing back up. I had to go find the story. Here's what we got to think about. Whether or not there was interest in Juzang, there's just no room for him. When you think about this, we returned 3 starters, Kie Clark, Thomas Walter Tensai, Jay Huff. So 3 guys who started this year for this team. At least for now, we return also these guys, Casey Morsell, Cody Satman, Francisco Cafaro. So that's 6 guys that played significant minutes this year in some way. I guess Cafaro not significant, but the other 5 did play double-digit minutes this year. Cafaro had a couple games. He played a pretty important role for us.
Also with Cafaro, you'd see – there was a role there developing for him.
There was. And so now you add in Sam Hauser, who, I was on the Zoom conferences last week with Mamani Diakite and Braxton Key, and they're both telling you, watch out, this kid's going to be all-ACC, maybe all-American performer next year. So there you go, UVA fans. If you can just hold out for a few months, basketball season coming back around, and we get to look forward to Sam Hauser next year. So that's now we're at 7 guys in our rotation, potential rotation guys. And I haven't even talked yet about Jabri Abdur-Rahim, Reese Beekman, Carson McCorkle, the three four-stars coming in that recruiting class, which is our highest-rated recruiting class we've had, including under the Tony Bennett era, including the Kyle Ty-Dre recruiting class. That also still doesn't consider our four-star from the 2019 class, Kadeem Shedrick, who redshirted this year. And so that's 11 guys. That's 11 guys. Now, we presume that there might be some roster movement, perhaps postseason, even though we are now 3 weeks out, I guess, from the season ending. And we haven't heard any news yet. Normally, you hear news around the 1st of April. Today is April 1st. So the first week of April, sometimes you hear the news about players leaving. You wouldn't have already heard it, though. The season's been over since 3 weeks ago. Scott and I have speculated about the future, perhaps, of Cody Statman, whether or not he may return. But we don't know anything right now. So you presume 11 guys are back. Tony, we know, likes to play 8 guys. So when Seth Towns just decides to go to Ohio State, is that as much that he really wanted to go to Ohio State over, say, Virginia, or Ohio State's got a space and they need him to play and, you know, Virginia doesn't? And I'd say the same thing in the Juzang case. 5-star kid, great. We saw him play at Kentucky. Not enough. He's not better than one of our 11 we've already got. Look at our roster. It's a pretty – the roster, we've been talking about this for a year, Scott. This roster coming up next year is a top 5 roster, if not a top 1 or 2 roster.
Yeah, according to some of the way too early preseason predictions, a 1 or 2 roster.
Yeah.
But the kid from Harvard, Jazing, they're not transferring from Kentucky, or they're not transferring to set a year. Or they're not transferring to just learn the system and be a role player. They're going somewhere where they are pretty much guaranteed to be a starter, and I would believe. Now, maybe not as much as Jazing, because he still has 3 years of eligibility left. But the Towns kid from Harvard, he's going somewhere where he can play. He's not going to go spend a year being a 16-minute player, 16-minute a game type player. He's going where he can get 30 or so quality minutes every game. So I don't think that's a shock that he would not choose UVA. He'd go somewhere, and I'm not sure what Ohio State's roster looks like, but I bet you if we looked at it a lot closer, there's minutes for him immediately.
Yeah. And I look at Virginia's situation next year basketball-wise. Obviously, Kia Clark starts at the 1, and J-Hub starts at the 5. After that, we know Hauser will start at the 4. He may be a big 3. He may be a Braxton Key-like 3, which would then allow you to do some more stuff up front. But Jabri Abdur-Rahim, it's going to be hard to not have him start next year. He's the highest-rated individual recruit we've had in the Tony Bennett era from the ESPN 100 perspective. Reese Beekman looks like a guy who will compete for a starting job. He'll be another point guard type. And that's, last year's team. Here's where watching last year's games, Scott, after watching all this year's games, I realized the difference last year. Kia Clark was a point guard for the first 30 minutes of the game, and Ty Jerome got to play off ball. And then the last 10 minutes, Ty was playing, point guard. He was on ball. And so I can only imagine that Beekman could give flexibility in a similar way to the Kia Clark next year. So the points will come from Hauser. The points will come from probably Huff and Abdur-Rahim. And then you got Beekman, you've got Wolde Tensai, you've got McCorkle, guys like that will give you some valuable minutes. But there's just basketball is a simple sport. You have 13 scholarships, 8 guys play, 3 of those guys do the bulk of your things. They score the bulk of your points, grab the bulk of your rebounds. They're the ones who get the assist, and the other guys fill in as needed. Sometimes they come up and score 10 points for you. They do some important things. But it's really that simple. 13-8-3. That's been the formula for Tony Bennett with his most successful teams.
You talked about another key factor for next year's team. You talked about where the points were going to come from. I think is equally important to understand is where the points don't necessarily have to come from, which is going to make us even a better team. And all of a sudden, Kia Clark doesn't have to be a big scorer anymore. He can be ball handler. He can do what his specialty is. So I think that's going to really be the catalyst to our team next year. Is Kia is going to really be able to concentrate on being a point guard?
I can only imagine him running pick and rolls with Sam Hauser and defenses trying to figure out, do we leave Hauser open for a three? That guy we're told is this lights out 6'9" three-point shooter. Do we allow Kihei in the lane to throw, to either get to the rim or throw an alley-oop pass to Jay Huff or kick out to Wota Tensai for a three on the wing? Yeah, my head's already dancing. I mean, this is good. I'm already feeling good about basketball, and it's 7 months away. I'm already feeling good about basketball when I start imagining all those kind of scenarios playing out on a regular basis. Yeah, you don't need Kihei running in the lane and creating off the dribble on his own. You'll have guys around him that defenses will either cheat off of and leave him open, or they'll work on him and leave those other guys open. You got so many more weapons next year that it makes you salivate a little bit what we can look forward to in a few months down the road.
I'm not sure how the NCAA actually awards an assist. I know it's different. You will. I know it's different than the NBA, but it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that Kihei Clark will be a double-digit assist person next year. Do you think?
Well, the only reason he won't be is because we don't play the number of possessions. Jay Billis actually makes this point a lot. When you look at Kihei averaging 6 assists a game, Virginia plays 59 possessions a game average pace. You know, Duke plays 70 possessions a game average pace. You extrapolate those numbers out, he's averaging 8 assists as it is right now in a Duke pace. And then you even go further. There are teams that play a 75 possession pace like Gonzaga. You know, you multiply his numbers out that far out, and you're talking maybe 9 assists a game. That's the only reason he won't. But that said, he will be just as effective as guys who play faster pace. When he averages 7.5 or 8 assists a game next year in our pace of play and the defense he plays, you know, one thing too that having other guards, because this year we were weak on guards. When you bring in Abdur Rahim, you bring in Beekman, you bring in McCorkle, you add them to a mix of Morsell and Wota Tensai. Now you got 5 guards competing for probably 3 jobs in the backcourt, maybe 4 jobs in the backcourt. All those guys are 4-star guys, are all talented guys. What it means is Kihei doesn't have to shoulder that load as a creator. He can spend more time on defense. And you start thinking last year, again, I took it for granted. And then when I watched those games a couple of weeks ago, the tournament recap games, the rebroadcast games, boy, just him getting in people's grills. And I remember some of the games now too, like the Virginia Tech game, Justin Robinson, a really good college point guard, played a lot in the G League this year with the Wizards G League team. Remember that game in JPJ where he got Robinson so flustered, he got a technical foul out of him. That kind of thing happened a lot because Kihei just is so pesky defensively. He played 38 minutes a game this year and had to, you know, maintain both being the one creator on this team and then playing that pesky defense. When next year he can pass off some of those roles from a creator standpoint and give us that championship level defense. I know, Scott, we were probably the two of three or four people total last year up until the NCAA tournament saying, here's why Kihei Clark needs to play. Everybody else out there, Kihei Clark, he shouldn't be playing. Kid can't shoot. What's he on the floor for? He's 5'9". He was as important a part of that championship team last year as the big three were. And I think next year, when you see him kind of not have to shoulder so much, when he gets to just be Kihei again, the Kihei that we had last year, because he'll have so much more talent around him, man, that kid's going to be really good.
So I'm going to ask you to put your crystal ball, dust it off, and look ahead a little bit. I think we're in agreement that next year's team might be the most offensively versatile, talented team that Tony's ever had at UVA. Dare we say that we move the transition, or we pick it up a little bit, and we might become a 68 to 70 possession per game team because we've just got so many weapons that it's not going to take us that deep into the shot clock to get a good shot?
No, because last year's team, you don't.
I knew you were going to say that. No, that was a setup.
Yeah, I've been saying no for 10 seconds. Here's why. Last year's team, when I say last year, I'm talking about the 2019 championship team, number 2 in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency, still played the pace. You still win games if you're Tony Bennett with defense, but the reason last year's team won a championship was they were balanced. They were number 2 in offense and number 2 in defense, nationally last year. I ran these numbers for a column I did this week. Scott, this is how much I miss basketball. I looked at the last of the 18 national champions in the KenPom.com era. This took a few minutes. I looked at their final regular season rankings in the KenPom.com in both offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency. When you look at the last 18 national champions, it's only arguable with one other team. I think it was a 2007 Kansas team. As far as who the two best national champions of the last 18 years were, because we were number two offense, number two defense. They were number one offense, number three defense. Every other national champion was further behind in one or both of those rankings. So last year's team, yeah, we didn't score 100 points a game. Actually, there was one game we scored 100 in, and that was like the big historic game because 100 points on a Tony Bennett game. But they were just as good. And so what having that those weapons around and still playing Tony style means, you know, this year, Scott, one thing was missing this year. The Cavalanche was missing this year. You know what we'll have again next year? We'll have ourselves about 30 Cavalanches. So that's something fun to look forward to. When the other team, you know, the two teams, the 2018 and 2019 teams, and folks who have to remember the Cavalanche because we won so many games by 2 points this year. The Cavalanche is when your defense is so suffocating and then your offense runs those 30-second plays and hits the shot with 2 seconds up on the shot clock and Ty Jerome would bank one in or Kyle would hit a three or DeAndre would hit a three and you play defense for 30 seconds and they still make every damn shot they throw up there. And then you go down the defensive end, you get a shot clock violation and you do that enough and it's about 10 minutes left and the score maybe is only 10 or 12 points, but you see them waving that white flag, that's the Cavalanche. I missed the Cavalanche this year. Scott, next year, we get some Cavalanches.
Yeah, we didn't have many this year. And the Cavalanche for an opposing team, I think someone described it. Maybe it was Billis. If you're on the other end of that Cavalanche, it's like going to the dentist for a root canal with no Novocaine.
Yeah.
It's a long, drawn-out, miserable feeling. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think we're going to have a lot of those next year in basketball. I'm looking forward to it. And I believe we will have a basketball season next year. I think, I'm positive that we'll have a football season.
I'm glad you shifted there because, you know, football, I think, will emerge unscathed. I mean, and I say unscathed, we could talk about UVA in a second because I've been on the phone or on the Zoom conferences with a couple of our players, and there were two more today. I got to transcribe those notes, but also with Coach Mendenhall last week, or maybe that was a week and a half ago now. The impact is on spring practice, but they're doing everything they can do to get ready for the summer. And then, of course, training camp starting in late July. But presumption is that they'll be back in that kind of thing. Basketball by November. Yeah, I mean, it is a question, I mean, whether or not we'll have NBA return. And I think it probably will, but in the format of, you know, in one place and one with no fans. Baseball, I'm really starting to worry about just from the standpoint of if we get to where it has to start, like the spring training can't start again until June, and then you start in July. There's been the talk about, you know, playing through October with regular season and then playing neutral site playoffs in November. That's still a possibility, but you know, baseball we know needs a month to get ready. They're going to need to go through basically spring training again to get ready. Anything past June 1st starts getting questionable. But that said, yeah, football seems almost certain at this stage, and I say almost certain. I feel 99% certain, and basketball even more. Basketball's next season even more so. I'm not feeling the greatest right now about NBA or MLB, but that's today. It's April 1st. There's so much that can happen. Obviously so much has happened in the last 3 weeks that you don't want to put any absolutes down as far as that goes. When you talk about football, you talk about basketball, you talk about UVA sports that we really love, the football season starting in the fall and then basketball in the wintertime. I think we're looking like we're in good shape there.
Yeah. And you know, we talking about MLB, which we both love, shameless plug here. For myself, I won't use the word guest, but I was a call-in to the show, to the WFAN show Friday night, And they had, with the host, they had David Cohn remotely answering questions. And I brought that question up to David Cohn about how would the logistics work for Major League Baseball? Because it's, if you think about it, it's so different than the NFL, somewhat different from the NBA, and that you need a minor league system. Because baseball, you've got the Nats, the Orioles, 162-game schedule. These teams have transitions almost every day, multiple times a week. Where do you get those players if you need a backup right fielder or you need to add an extra arm in your bullpen? You don't just carry extra players on your roster because it does them no good to sit in the dugout for 2 weeks and never get an at-bat or never get an inning to throw, you know, live inning to throw. And Cohn agreed with that, and he said that's why he doubted that Major League Baseball would come back, because there was so many layers to this that you needed a triple-A system. You needed a triple-A system, needed a double-A system. There needed to be a funnel of teams, at least one deep into a triple-A system. So how – there's just so many logistics involved in having a Major League Baseball season, and that's what worries me the most about that, is you just can't roll it out with having that pipeline of players to come up and fill positions when you need it.
I wouldn't worry that you couldn't have the players if they made the call, say June 1st. The country's gotten back. We feel like we've got coronavirus under some control, and it's not going to further spread. And take this out again. If you made that call, and to me, June 1st is an important date as far as that goes, because then you can presume that you can start the season July 1st. You're probably going to play 80 to 90, maybe 100 games at most, and you'd have to play into October at that stage. You can ramp up minor leagues, I think, because you just put everybody in spring training. My concern is not as much the ability to ramp up players, it's the time factor. Where football and college basketball and then NBA next season have the advantage, we're still in the middle of NBA season, technically. If I was making a call on that, and it's not my money. If I was making a call on that, and I wouldn't say it right now, because again, things can change in the next few weeks. I'm not a medical person. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm reading as much about this as I can. I'm trying to look for the reliable source of information. It does seem like, if I had to be a betting man, I'd say no NBA this year, no finish to this NBA season, because it just feels like we're not going to have it under control in time to make it feel right. I mean, if they start playing, if the NBA season stopped on March 12th, and then we started playing games again in July, that doesn't feel like the same season. It really doesn't. You could just chalk it up and just say, let's just wait until October and start again next season. Time is an essence there too. But where football's not impacted is, let's assume that all the models are right. And things, you get under some control in June. Talking with Bronco Mendenhall last week, he said one thing that he's looking at is, he's making all of his planning right now with his players. I mean, they're able to connect with their players. They're actually able to do some coaching. At first they weren't, and then the ACC and then other leagues have decided to allow coaching remotely, obviously. You can't individually one-on-one physically coach, but, coaching through things like we're using here, Zoom. They've got them on training plans. And not all the guys certainly have weights at home, but they've given them athletic training plans, conditioning plans to try to stay in shape. He's presuming they don't see them again until start of fall camp in late July. But he did throw out there the possibility that the NCAA, the coaches have discussed, coaches being across the Division I spectrum have discussed the possibility of, if this lifts sooner, can those schools that either didn't finish spring practice or didn't even start, and UVA hadn't even started yet. UVA was one of three ACC schools that had not started spring practice yet. UVA, Tech, and North Carolina had not started spring practice yet. Could you have some spring practice in June, a limited number of practices, and then, go away and then come back for training camp? So you can tell when that level of thought's being put to it, that there's a there. These aren't dumb guys. These aren't dumb people. This is money that's made or lost if they don't think these processes through. So, I'm confident. I mean, if they're putting this level of thought to it, that things are in motion as far as that goes. And certainly, basketball, college basketball doesn't start. Practice doesn't start until October 1st, and the season doesn't start until the first week of November. I mean, everything I'm reading suggests that we'll be in really good shape by then. By then, we've had a whole summer of it's expected that because of the warm temperatures in the summertime, that just like the flu, that, you know, this will die down. There's certainly a possibility of a reemergence in the fall, but we'll have had time to develop treatments. A lot of people will have immunity to it, that kind of thing. So basketball and football next year, fine. Not feeling great about the NBA, not feeling great about MLB. But as much as that would hurt that we would miss, especially MLB, Scott, you and I are both baseball guys at heart. As much as it would hurt, I would almost, kind of like I said about the NBA, if the NBA is only going to come back with a weird kind of thing, and if the MLB is going to come back in a weird kind of way, I'd almost rather just wait until next year. I mean, and that's my thought. I wanted to get your thought on that.
Oh, I agree 100%. And, you know, we had a texting conversation last week about some of the players, you know, about whether the players were getting paid. We found out they are getting paid. They're not getting paid as much. They're getting paid from a pool of money, but they're still getting paid. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for players that are 3 years into a $200 million contract, not getting paid for a year. Okay. So they're living off of, you know, probably $100,000, $100 million in the bank. I think you can make out, you know, for a little while.
But that's the top guys. There are a lot of guys who aren't in that realm.
There's a lot that aren't. Yeah, and minor leaguers that are basically, you know, living in poverty right now because of that. But I think that I would sacrifice MLB if it meant getting a real football season, a full football season, both collegiately and NFL, and college basketball as well. One of the things that I was able to ask David Cone about was the players don't like to hear, and we talked about, we labeled them as something a lot less than manly because, you know, Lord help them if they had to play a double hitter.
Yeah.
But a double hitter to a Major League Baseball player is just not something they like to do. They're creatures of habit. Hitters like to go through batting practice before the game. Multiple double hitters means they don't have the chance to go through a full batting practice. They don't take batting practice in between games of a double hitter. They're facing different pitchers. Their mindset is just not what it would be for a single game. Plus, it does take a toll on them. You know, I know they're sitting in air conditioned dugouts, but they're also out there giving it 150% effort in the heat. MLB players, and that's why it was so much of an integral part of the collecting bargaining agreement, that owners just can't arbitrarily say we're going to play a double hitter. I mean, they take playing double hitters very seriously in that they don't want to do it. So if you try to have a condensed schedule, there was one format that the Major League Baseball had tossed out, that they would play three double hitters a week. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't fly with the Players Association. And I guess I can see their point to a little bit that baseball is such a, the players are such creatures of habit, and there's that, we're such a drilling, you know, we have numbers in our heads, 162 game season, batting averages. So if it's going to really compromise the integrity of the game too much, then I say just forget it and let's come back next year.
What I'd say to that is, you know, I'm not a fan. Scott knows this, and so our listeners probably don't know this. I talked earlier about watching the Tiki and Tierney radio show simulcast on CBS Sports Network a lot of afternoons. I watch it because of Tiki. Tiki's, you know, this is a UVA sports podcast / Facebook Live. Tiki's one of our guys. He's one of our legends. The Tierney guy annoys me mostly, but usually I watch that show until the first thing he says that annoys me, and then I change it. Sometimes I last a half hour. Sometimes I last 2 minutes. But he made a great point. I guess I left it on after he annoyed me and I forgot to change channel. And then he was talking about this very topic. He said he was a college baseball player. And he said, you know, think about this. Ted Williams, his career was interrupted twice by World War II and then by the Korean War. He missed 3 years each of those wars to serve in the military. And he didn't just like wear a uniform and go play baseball to entertain troops at USO. He was America's best fighter pilot. Ted Williams. I got his jersey hanging over here. I idolize this guy. He's the greatest hitter of all time. And he was our best fighter pilot for 6 years. Now you look at Ted Williams' numbers. We talk about Barry Bonds broke Hank Aaron's record. If Ted Williams doesn't miss those 6 years, it's Ted Williams' record, and Barry Bonds is still taking steroids trying to beat it because he hit 588 home runs, missing 6 years in his prime to fight wars. And now we're asking our guys to play doubleheaders, and they're like, oh, it might mess my routine up. He missed the best 6 years of his career. Major League Baseball played through World War II. We played through the Vietnam War. We played through the Korean War. If the most you got to do is sacrifice a couple of at-bats because, you don't get batting practice before the game. Ted Williams, I would say he's rolling over in his grave, Scott, but I think his family tried to keep him alive with that they kept him in refrigeration for that cryogenics crap that they thought 20 years ago.
So, part of him is rolling over in the grave.
Part of him is rolling over his grave, and his brain is still saying, I could still get three hits in a game. So that's Ted Williams. Well, come on. We got to be smarter than that, right?
I'm with you on that 100%. So here's the two things about Ted Williams real quick. Two things that stand out. And I've got a book in my sports library bookshelf full of baseball books. But Ted Williams' book is one of my best. Thank goodness he did miss 6 years. Who knows how many stats he would have accumulated had he not. But what is the one stat that will never be taken away from Ted and the one stat that defines who he was? And that is he's the last player to hit 400 in a season.
And no one will ever hit 400 again, no doubt about that. There's two records that will never be broken in baseball, and they were both in 1941, him hitting 406. As he finished up, and then DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, no one will ever do those things again.
And maybe we had Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak.
Well, and then, the mythical pitching record, I say mythical because pitchers don't, it's not the dead ball era. No one will ever win 511 games like Cy Young did. And actually, no one will ever win 30 games in a season. I guess we can go with that. Denny McClain will have been the last one to do that. That we've already gone from our list of one thing that will never be done to like 7 or 8. But
they don't get 30 starts.
You don't get 30 starts. You'd have to go 30-0 with one like no decision to get there. But there's a few things.
So the other stat about Ted, the other story real quick, and you can YouTube this. It was a Phil Donahue show. And he had Ted on as a guest. And they had about a 20-minute dialogue, and Phil asked Ted, he said, "So Ted, I want to ask you, we talked about the state of the game today, pitchers, if you were to face today's pitchers," and I think this was an interview maybe done in 1990 or maybe 90. Ted at the time was 81, so I'm not sure what year it was done. You could research that. But so Phil asked, if you were to play today, what do you think you would hit against major league pitching today? And Ted gave it some thought, and he said, Phil said, could you hit 300? And Ted said, no. He said, I might come close, but I probably would only hit about 280. And Phil said, really? You'd only hit about 280? I can't believe that. You hit 406 one season. You don't think you only could hit about 280. And Ted, in dead seriousness, said, Phil, I'm 81 years old.
That's a great story. And another number I saw, and I just saw this number recently, like I think yesterday. That summer of 1941 I talked about, he hits 406. He wins a Triple Crown. Joe DiMaggio wins the MVP that year. So a guy who hit 400 with a Triple Crown does not win the MVP because Joe DiMaggio has a 56-game hitting streak. Here's something I didn't know. During that 56-game streak, in the same 56 games, when Ted Williams, his games, he played for the Red Sox, during that streak, he out-hit Joe DiMaggio. DiMaggio in that 56-game streak hit 408. And during that 56-game period, Williams hit 412. So even at the best Joe DiMaggio ever was, Ted Williams was better. Ted Williams always hated the fact that Joe DiMaggio was called the world's greatest living ball player. But then again, Ted didn't pretend to play defense. He stood out in the outfield and practiced his batting stance between pitches. That's some fun Ted Williams stories. Hey, that's a great way to
keep baseball up. Fan, if you're a sports fan, now's the time to get some books out and to pass some time. Read some of these books about the greats, you know, the past, Williams, DiMaggio. Those are just some fascinating stories. The one I just finished reading was on Jackie Robinson, and it was a great read. Next time we do the podcast, I'll go get it and show it. It was actually written by a friend of my daughter's who works for USA Today, and she got a release before it goes to the publishers.
Yeah, the galley release, right? Yeah.
And it is a fantastic read. And I'll give it to you the next time we see each other, which might be 10 years from now, who knows. But Jackie Robinson's story, phenomenal. If you haven't seen the movie 42, you can get it on Netflix. Watch it. It's unbelievable.
I would recommend we probably need to put together a list of good books, sports books to read. Anything by Roger Kahn or Roger Angel, books about the 40s and 50s, the Boys of Summer, especially Roger Kahn's seminal book. David Halberstam wrote some good, really good baseball books too. The 1964 Yankees and Cardinals team he wrote about. I can't think of the name of that book right now, but I'll have to look that up. Maybe also put together some of our favorite sports movies. And hey, Scott, I'm going to give
Can I make a suggestion on the next podcast?
Sure.
Can we talk Better Call Saul?
Let's talk some Better Call Saul. And I was going to give you some homework on one thing. Scott, and for our listeners out there, both live and on our archive here and on our podcast. Seth Megenson and I have been going through the NCAA tournament. Jerry Carter and I have started doing something. He came up with this concept of the greatest college basketball trios of all time, and we're doing a bracket with those. So here, Scott, if you want to take this on, this should be fun. And this will give you some homework. And plus, Stephanie will love me for this because you'll probably like be out of her hair for at least a week putting this together. Ultimate ACC tournament. This is what I'm conceiving, Scott. I want to see what you think, and if you want to take this on. Pick the best team from every school. So Virginia's would probably be obvious. It'd probably be our team last year that won the national championship. But you pick the best Duke team, best UNC team all the way down. Scott, you even got to pick a Virginia Tech team. But you pick them all out. You pick them out first. You let the 2019 UVA team versus whatever Duke team we decide, whatever, you know, say it's a 2001 Duke team, the 1982 UNC team, whatever you decide as far as those goes, you're picking those. Then we'll seed them. Then we'll play the ultimate ACC tournament. We'll play Tuesday games. You know, you have 10 versus 15, 11 versus 14, 12, 13. Then we'll play our Wednesday games. Well, those feed into 8, 9, and all that stuff. Play it all out. You and I will do podcasts just like, you know, Seth and I have been doing. And we'll play the ultimate ACC tournament. And here's what we'll determine. The ultimate best ACC team of all time. What do you think about that?
I'm already – hold on just a second. Let me check my calendar. Yeah, I can do that.
And so
– I can do that. That's great. I will. I'll start on that tonight. I've poured through the ACC handbook that we were given.
That's right.
You would not believe some of the interesting facts. Here's a fact for Waynesboro residents. Dick Lotz, and we both know Dick Lotz, and I was fortunate to consider a very close friend. Dick Lotz was perfect from the field and the free throw line in ACC tournament play.
He
never missed a field goal, and he never missed a free throw.
And he at least made one, right?
Oh, absolutely. He did. Mm-hmm.
Because
he was perfect.
But I've never made one.
He was 100% from the free throw line and 100% from the field goal line in his ACC tournament appearances.
So this is an advantage. I know you've been reading that book because when we left Greensboro, you know, we grabbed a few of those on the way out. I put them under quarantine because, you know, we were leaving a mass event and they were.
Don't put it in the microwave. That doesn't work.
It doesn't work. No. Yeah. No, it'll. Yeah. Then the firefighters who come to your house have to practice social distancing. But no, I know you've been reading that book, pouring it through. You probably know everything and more than you ever imagined you would know about ACC basketball. So let's put that to work. So next podcast, Scott, you and I will get together. Let's get together maybe later this week. Because what else are we doing? There are no weekends and weeks anymore. It's just days until April 30th. So we'll get back together. We'll talk some Better Call Saul. Let's start next time. We'll talk some Better Call Saul. We got a lot to talk about there, buddy.
We do. And publicize, I mean, put this out on Augusta Free Press, because I'm telling you, for those of you out there that are stuck like we are, sitting in front of the TV and watching these network newscasts is not good for you. You're just asking for misery by doing that.
And also, have you finished Tiger King yet?
I have.
We're going to finish it up either tonight or tomorrow. So the next time we talk, we can talk. So we'll talk some Better Call Saul. We'll talk some Tiger King. I'm sure we'll talk some sports. I'll give you some time to work on that Ultimate ACC tournament. We'll be talking about that probably starting next week. But yeah, let's do that. And no network.
We need to invite Scott Radcliffe to be a part of this, because he is a better Scott is the common denominator for all of us. He can talk basketball with us, and he's also a Better Call Saul, and a Tiger King expert. So if you haven't started watching Tiger King, I would advise you to start drinking before you start watching.
I'm three into it, Scott. It was hard last night going to bed. I wanted to watch the rest of them, but we had to go to bed. So,
okay. Oh, so you have started.
Well, so this has worked. This is great that this worked. You know, Crystal and I have used Zoom now twice to do these kind of Facebook Lives. Scott's the first person outside of the immediate address here that we've gotten in to do this. So now we're going to do a three-way with Scott Radcliffe coming up soon. We can get four in here. You can see there's space when I'm pointing down below where we're sitting here on this screen. We can get four in here. So maybe we'll get Jerry in and we'll just have a free for all eventually. But I guess one step at a time. I like the suggestion. I'll reach out to Scott Radcliffe, Scott German, and we'll get this figured out.
So, hey, I was invited again to call in tonight on, but if you have to stay up till at least 1 a.m. It's not exactly prime time. So I may even see if I can, call in a favor and get Steve Summers to call in one for us.
Oh, and Crystal Graham is chiming in now, and she probably yelled at me when I go back downstairs if I don't say, because I haven't been paying attention, honestly. So she's saying we should start a separate entertainment show. I'm not against that at all. And then also, she's suggesting Better Call Saul, Tiger King, and Ozark. Are you into Ozark yet this year?
I finished it.
You've already finished it? Man. I got some homework to do now. Crystal, I'm not sure. We got to start binge watching. We're working too hard. There's too much news to report on. So I got four more episodes of Tiger King, probably four or five of Ozark. All right. The gauntlet's laid down. Crystal Abbey Graham, and so Crystal then will join us because she watches these shows too. We're gonna have to figure out if Zoom can give us more spaces on this page. This will be fun.
We'll do it again this week.
Well, Scott, thank you for joining us. Stay on here right away. I'm gonna end the Facebook Live. We can stay on top for just another minute or two. But for our viewers out there, our listeners on our archive and our podcast, thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you again soon.